Golf Smarter number 323, published on March 6, 2012, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
How the PGA Tour impacts golf course design with Trip Davis.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Trip.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How are you? It's been a while since you've been on the show, and for a lot of our listeners who've never met you before, Trip was like on one of the first couple episodes and was, I think, maybe the first golf architect that I ever had a chance to talk to at length. So it's worth having you back because of your insights on golf design. So it's great to have you.
Well, it's good to be here. We've been busy, thankfully, since we last talked.
That's a good thing in this these days for somebody to be busy, especially in this industry, right?
Well, the economy has really affected new course work in the United States. There's really, I've only heard of, I think, three new golf courses that are going in the U.S. right now.
Really?
And but the restoration market in the U.S., even though it's slowed in some ways, especially some of the private clubs that we've worked with for a long time, that market is still and is still going to some extent, and in large measure because as the economy has done what it's done, the competition for new members is higher, and so they have to make sure that they use their capital in such a way that they keep good enough to be able to maintain, retain existing members and attract new members, basically stay up to the Joneses.
When there's only three new projects that you've heard of going on in the United States, are those resort courses, private courses, public courses? Who's building right now in the U.S.?
Well, as I understand, there's one project that Native Americans are doing as part of a casino.
Okay.
In Washington.
There seems to be a lot of those going up, huh? Well, I mean, I've seen a lot of golf courses associated with the Indian resorts.
Well, they've got money, and it's an attraction for, largely for their casinos. And so we've done one in Oklahoma that we did 7 years ago now. It's an attraction to their casinos, and because they're turning such, kind of unbelievable amounts of money in their casinos, they can afford it.
Sure.
And so it helps the revolving door that they have. But the other two that I'm aware of, one is in Florida, which is a private club, and then the other one that I know of is in California, which is another private club.
Yeah. Or somebody's own backyard type of thing, like a Justin Timberlake building his own golf course type of thing, right?
Right. And there may be some others out there that I don't know about, but, talking to a lot of the builders and other people in the industry, those are the only three that I'm aware of.
And when you say you talk to builders, that's different than the architects, right? There's the architects and they're the people who do the actual construction work, and those who you're talking to, the builders?
Right.
Right.
And in large measure, the reason why we're talking to builders a lot is because they're calling us wondering if we have any work coming out. And so, you hear a lot about what's going on through them, you hear from just different people in the industry. But
sure.
The United States golf course builders are really struggling right now because you had, 10 years ago, you had 100 different companies out there competing for a decent amount of work, and now you had 100 companies. That number's been cut substantially, but
sure.
you're talking about, in dollar volume, you're really talking about 10% of the work that was there 10 years ago.
Wow. And they must have, I would imagine the builders versus architects must have a tremendous overhead.
They do. I mean, you know, just simply because they're having to carry so much more insurance, they're having to keep on larger staffs, the equipment, ownership, maintenance, and so forth is significantly higher.
Yeah, I'm curious. Well, let's say there's a builder based in the Northwest. Well, let's just say the Southwest of the United States, and he gets a project in the Midwest. Does he rent all that gear when he, you know, to move the earth, or does he bring his own with him?
It depends on the company. Some of the bigger companies will have their own machinery.
Wow.
Some of the smaller ones will typically rent. Even some of the bigger companies now have diluted themselves with a lot of their machinery, and the projects they are doing, they're renting a good bit of the equipment. And which makes a lot of sense because, you know, if you can sell off part of those assets to keep your cash higher, then you can survive through these times. And when you do get a project, you just build the cost of the rental into your cost of your project.
And when you say these times, I know that the world, let alone the United States, but the global economy is struggling all over the place. Do you see the golden years like we just had over the last, you were talking about the last 10 years in golf course new construction. Do you see that ever coming back?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, I've talked to some architects that were practicing back in the late 60s, early 70s when, you know, we went through a similar situation where there was no new course work, basically late 60s, early 70s. And Reese Jones, for one, was telling me that when he struck out on his own, there wasn't a lot of work out there at all. He said, it wasn't nearly as bad as it is now, but it was pretty bad. And there was, you know, the discussion then was, well, you know, it's never going to be the same as it once was. Because, in the late 50s, early 60s, there was a big boom in golf course construction. And when we went through it again in the late 80s, early to mid to almost late 90s. And so it's hard to say. I mean, you know, the reason why people were building golf courses back then in both of those time periods was largely real estate driven. And unless our population slows down, we're going to be building more homes at some point in the future. And it's hard to say whether or not it will come back in the same way that it did. The game of golf itself has got to continue to grow in order for there to be a demand. But I think as much as anything, I think what may change, Fred, is that instead of building new ones, we may be going back into the older ones and completely rebuilding them. And a reconstruction project. So we just finished one in Mexico where we took two older golf courses and built a completely new golf course where they didn't have a need for two golf courses. So I think you're going to see more of that in the future. It's really hard to say whether an actual new construction is ever going to rebound to the point that it has been. But I think rebuilding older courses, basically in the new golf courses, is going to be a lot more active.
You were saying that when he got started, you say Reese Jones, right? When he was getting started in the 60s, it was tough for him, and it's probably not so hard for him anymore. But anybody getting started in any industry is going to be struggling until you establish your name, which he did, and now he probably is thinking that business is great.
Well, yeah, I mean, he Reese built a great name for himself, and, you know, he's been able to carry that over into other markets, too. I mean, China is the big market now. We've got one project over there right now, and Reese is very active over there.
And the whole Jones family seems to be busy all the time, right?
Yeah, Mr. Jones Jr. is... the project that we have, we actually competed against him to get it, and he's got a base in Japan, and they do a lot of work in Asia, but he always has.
Yeah,
and
you beat him out for that job.
Yeah, we were fortunate in that. You know, we're a smaller company.
Sure. So is it a price thing or congratulations? No, that's awesome.
It was more of a we're going to give you more attention scenario because we only do one or two new courses at a time, whereas he's got, you know, I think right now they've got 10 or 11 going around the world, plus they're competing for the Olympics project. And so that's, you know, where we fit into the niche in the marketplace is with clients that are more concerned with the quality of the project and really are more comfortable having someone that's going to be on site constantly and more involved. That's whereas, you know, Mr. Jones, they developed the machinery to be able to produce good work and more mass and more quantity. Our focus is a little bit more on one or two projects at a time. And so it just comes down to sometimes the name recognition versus what we have to offer in terms of greater commitment and time for each project.
Sure, and I would think that a property owner in their marketing would want to weigh the fact, do we want to pay this much so we can say that we have a Robert Trent Jones Jr. course, or do we just say that we have a new course and you don't necessarily know that it's going to be a Trip Davis or a Trip Davis Associates course, right?
Well, the thing that's kind of neat about the China market is that right now they're, you know, it's the same way we were back in the 20s in the U.S., the 1920s, and that really the learning names out there. Mm-hmm. You know, they're obviously in China. When you go there, there are some names that the developers have heard of, you know, the Nicholases and Mr. Jones and so forth. And so the name will help them in some respects, but it's less of a name thing as much as it is a quality and commitment level element. Because over there, they can sell me as the greatest thing since sliced bread. Because they don't know of the names over there. So I'm competing a little bit less against names than I had to in the U.S. up until now. And we're trying to build our name, and we've done a lot of good work. And so, you know, recent projects in the U.S. and one in Mexico have helped us elevate name recognition. But, you know, Mr. Jones has been at it for twice as long as I have, so his name recognition is obviously going to be better.
Yeah. I have a follow-up question. When you talked about the 50s and 60s and then another boom in the 90s, but before I get to that, I want to mention that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and want to make a recommendation. Boy, is this crunching sound going on in the background here. It's my fax machine. I still have a fax machine. Why do I have a fax machine that makes so much noise? Or why do I have one altogether? Anyway, Audible would like to let Golf Smarter listeners get their first book for free. They want you to give Audible a try and see how good it is to do audiobooks in your life. A trip, I got to imagine, with all the travel that you do, you can't be all the time at your computer working. You've got to be able to either read books or do audiobooks. Do you do either?
I do both. The audiobooks are easier just because you're not having to carry the book around. And
get a Kindle.
Yeah, well, I got my daughter one, and
if you're traveling
me a book.
Yeah, if you're traveling a lot, you have a Kindle, it just... The weight stays the same and it's simple. But anyway, luckily, Kindle made by Amazon also owns Audible, so we're not doing anything wrong. But do you do audiobooks when you're traveling?
Well, I'm reading a book right now, or I'm listening to a book right now called Quiet. It's an interesting book about the difference between introverts and extroverts. And
it's called Choir?
Quiet.
Oh, Quiet.
Yeah.
Quiet.
Uh-huh.
And let's see here. I'm looking that one up here at audible.com. And the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell me about that. That sounds fascinating.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I'm part extrovert and part introvert. I'm probably more introvert than either. And the book is about how the value of being extroverted or having an extroverted personality is weighed so more heavily by our culture today, especially in the United States, where if you're the one to speak up, your idea is seen as more valid than the one who stays more in the background. And I'm not all the way through it yet. I'm going to China on Monday, and so I'm hoping to listen to the last 3/4 of it while I'm on the plane on the way out there.
It's a 10-hour book, so it would be a good one for our listeners to get for free. Why not? And it's interesting because, you know, you talk about the introvert, extrovert. I've heard stories of the success that they have at all girls schools with little girls because they can speak their mind a little easier. They can be a little more extroverted because when they're in a classroom that's a mix between boys and girls, boys are far more, especially little ones, they're far more aggressive and they speak out more, so the girls hold back. But the girls in all girls schools seem to excel a little more and come out of their shell. I wonder, does she address that in the book? Does Susan address that information?
I haven't gotten that far yet, so maybe.
Yeah, let me know if they do.
Yeah, they... it's a case study kind of book, so it's really worth listening to because it's it helps you kind of understand which you are and how they kind of function a little better, I think.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the recommendation. And again, listeners of Golf Smarter can pick that book if they like, Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain, or any book that you'd like. You have your choice of over 100,000 titles, and the first one is free. So to sign up, go to audiblepodcast.com, that's AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Trip, thanks for the recommendation.
You're welcome.
Now, when you mentioned the boom in golf architecture and construction, a new construction. There was a boom in the 50s, 60s. There was a lot of real estate being developed. There was also a boom, you said, around the 90s. I see that it's interesting. It's a chicken and the egg situation of that time in the 50s, 60s. That was when Palmer and Nicklaus were at their peak. In the 90s, you had Tiger, Phil, Greg Norman. You know, does construction follow the PGA Tour excitement, or does it promote more interest with golf courses going up that people are playing, and then all of a sudden these guys become superstars? What do you think, from your perspective, where that comes from?
Well, I think the excitement level on the PGA Tour in terms of the number of, or the types of players, the number of players that golfers around the world can identify with, and or it excites new people into the game, certainly doesn't hurt. I think from a golf course construction perspective, I think it is a minor factor. I think the economy as a whole is a much stronger factor. But it certainly doesn't hurt. And, I think when Palmer and Nicklaus were, and Gary Player at that time were going after each other, it certainly developed a more worldwide and broader appeal to the game, just simply because people wanted to follow the drama behind it. And you had the same thing, with Tiger Woods coming out and how he introduced more people to the game, especially getting younger players excited to play. And so it doesn't hurt, but, in general, I think what it does follow more so than anything is the economy. The last boom, really prior to the, late 50s, early 60s, was in the 20s, and during another economic boom in the United States. And so, in that time frame, actually, we had Bobby Jones and Walter Hagen and so forth. But, if you look at the period in the 30s and the 40s and even early 50s, when you had Hogan and Snead and Mr. Nelson, there was a broad interest in the game following those guys, but you didn't see much in the way of golf course development, just because the economy wasn't very good.
Why did you refer to him as Mr. Nelson and the other guys by their first name? Did you forget his
first name? Well, I got to know Mr. Nelson.
And, is that right?
We redid Preston Trail in Dallas, Texas, in 2008 and 2009. And that was, of course, that Mr. Nelson helped design with Ralph Plummer, and he was one of the founding members. And so before we did the project, before we started design, I got to know him and spend some time with him and talk with him about what we were going to do, and never met anyone like him. And there's a definite reference there that I have for him. I never got to know Mr. Sneed or Mr. Hugging, but...
And was he Mr. Nelson to his face? You never called him Byron?
No, I called him Mr. Nelson.
Wow.
But I grew up in South Georgia, and anytime I didn't say Mr. or Mrs., I got my ear clipped pretty hard by my dad. So.
It's a different world today.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get my girls, I have two daughters, and I'm trying to get them to do the same thing. Instead of saying, you know, yeah, or I'll try to have them say yes, ma'am, yes, sir, and call people by their last name as well. So, you know, Mr. or Mrs. And, but yeah, it's a different world in a lot of respects.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we are definitely part of a different world. Got an email the other day about texting for senior citizens, how kids have their own language, you know, LOL and all those things. And one of them was DWI, driving while incontinent. I'm going to be coming down to Dallas. We've talked about this before, but I want to bring it back up. I'm going to be coming down to Dallas for April 1st weekend, and you've got two courses down. If anybody's down there and maybe want to play on Sunday afternoon, maybe you should email me. But I'm going to be you have two courses that I've always been fascinated about, and we've talked about them in the past. I'd like to bring them back up again, that you did near Dallas in the Colony, Texas. The Tribute and Old American. And these were not normal, hey, here's a piece of land, just go ahead and make a golf course type of. These were more thematic, right?
Well, the Tribute is definitely more thematic. The Tribute we opened in 2000. And when we were hired to do that project, we had, you know, that was another project where we were fortunate to beat out some of the big names to get it. And one of the reasons why is the concept that we threw out and ended up implementing was to build holes that were in the style of some of my favorite holes from Scotland and blended into 18 holes that worked together. A lot of the golf courses that had been done before where there were more copies of particular holes, I found that the golf course didn't have a certain flow or it didn't have a certain rhythm to it. It was just a collection of 18 holes. And, you know, any great golf course has got a certain flow or rhythm to it. So that was something we were trying to implement. So the Tribute is very similar to when Charles Blair McDonald back in the early 1900s built the National Golf Links. It was built and patterned after as tributes to his favorite holes from around the world. Hmm. And that's what we did with the Tribute.
How hard of a sell was that for you to the owners?
Well, at the time, it wasn't that. That was right when the Tour 18 courses were coming out. Royal Links and Las Vegas had been built. Yeah. And that was kind of a trend at the time. Hmm. And so... that was something that, you know, in terms of selling, it was it made it a little easier then than it probably would now if there were any golf courses being built. But the trick though, and the reason why it's been ranked in the top 100 public courses in the U.S. is because it's not just a collection of 18 holes. It really does feel like one golf course.
Awesome. And what about Old American?
Old American is very different in that it's still themed after a early American style of architecture. We had always intended to do two golf courses there, and Jack Matthews, who's the developer of both golf courses, he does a lot of real estate, other types of real estate development, and is very big on having those themed in some way. He bought a Gillies country western bar to downtown Dallas, you know, that's obviously a theme type of deal as well. And, you know, the original concept was that the first course would be, I look back in time at early, you know, at Scottish courses, whereas the second course would be a look back in time at early American courses, what happened to the game when it came over to the United States. And the second course was not intended to be plays on individual holes as much as it was the style of architecture in the 1920s. And so the golf course is intended to have that feel and that type of option-oriented strategy that you found with golf courses that were built in the 20s, like Crystal Downs up in Michigan and Prairie Dunes, National Golf Links, which was built part of the 20s. But that was the intent with the second course. And we had a better piece of land to work with. And Justin Leonard was also someone that I got involved because of his love of early American architecture. And the fact that he's from Dallas, it helped from a marketing perspective as well. But it was unique because Justin really shared a lot of his experiences playing those old golf courses, major championships, and got very, very involved in the process. It wasn't just something he was putting his name on.
What do you mean by he shared a lot of his knowledge on the design of the golf course and his experience of playing those courses? I mean, because you've played those courses too, but how does playing competitively at that level differ on your view of the course?
Well, I've played competitively in college and still play some amateur golf, and you definitely look at a golf course differently when you're playing it as a competitor than you would just out playing it for fun. And what you really pick up more than anything is subtleties, because those little subtleties in the way that a green may slope and the way that a hole may be angled impact the way you're going to score. And when you've got to add them up at the end of the round and sign your name and it gets put up on the board, in Justin's case, you know, there's a difference between winning a British Open or winning a PGA or winning a U.S. Open. Those subtleties really come into greater focus under those circumstances than they would if you just went out and looked at things and played the golf course. I spend a lot of time walking around and looking at courses and studying some of the older courses, and I really try when I'm doing that to look at how the subtle features of the hole impact the way that the player's going to play the hole and how it's going to affect scoring. Because that, you know, is more important to the longevity of that feature or that hole or that golf course than just how cool it looks.
Yeah, and I want to, if you don't mind, I would love to have you come back for one of our members-only episodes on our next episode. If you can hang a bit with me more, I really want to talk about design strategy and what it is that you look at a hole and put yourself in the, let's say, non-competitive, the amateur player, and put yourself in their mind when you're designing a hole and how that works for you, and then how do we translate that when we're out of a golf course? Can you spend more time talking about this?
Sure.
Awesome. Thank you. So what that means is that if you are not subscribed to Golf Smarter for members only and you want to continue listening to this conversation with Trip Davis, because next week is going to be a members only episode, please keep this listener-supported podcast alive by joining Golf Smarter for members only. Not only will you get a new episode every single week, you also have complete access to our archives of over 300 different evergreen interviews of the Golf Smarter podcast. So please join Golf Smarter for members only at golfsmarter.com. Trip Davis is at tdagolf.net. And I have so many more questions. I really appreciate you spending the time and appreciate that you are going to be coming back for another episode.
Well, you're welcome. I look forward to it. That's one thing I love doing is talking about golf course design. So when I've got the time, I'd be happy to talk about it.
So next up, we're going to get into how understanding the elements of golf course design can lower your scores. It's true. Now, whether you found Golf Smarter on your computer, your iPhone, your iPod, your iPad, most likely you found us because you did a search for golf in iTunes. May I make a request, please? If you could just take a couple of minutes, I'd really appreciate if you could provide some comments about the Golf Smarter podcast in iTunes. Personally, listener reviews and high ratings frequently dictate whether or not I'm going to subscribe. So let other potential listeners know what you think. It will make a difference. I really appreciate it. Thanks. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.